Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 92 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John. And this episode is all about how Paddle grew their revenue by 2,475% according to Deloitte in UK. Now, as a team at SaaS commerce platform, Paddle has learned real growth is about entering new markets, and that takes thoughtful attention to pricing and making inroads into new geographic regions. In this episode, Ed Fry, Paddle's growth ops lead, shares his five-star growth framework that describes how Paddle achieved this incredible revenue growth, 2,475%. In episode 92, you'll learn first the five-star growth framework that's helped Paddle grow 2,475% in revenue. Second, why businesses need to optimize for being international from day one. And third, how to unlock real growth by expanding your market. Before we jump in, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Superside. Built for marketing, creative, product design, and strategy teams, Superside makes it easy to bring your ideas to life. With a dedicated team assigned to all subscription customers, Superside delivers game-changing design at lightning-fast speeds with no pricing surprises. Create an account and get started, or better yet, book a demo to see it in action at superside.com. You can also find the link in the description of this episode. Enough about me, let's jump into my chat with Ed. Hey everybody, I'm excited to chat with Ed finally. I met him at SaaS North, a conference here in Canada, and you're back all the way in London, right, Ed?
Yeah, that's right. So we're based in London, traveling over to Ottawa for not really to warm up there.
I can imagine. And how are things with you this morning?
Pretty good. Well, it's the afternoon here, so Friday afternoon.
Oh, sorry, yeah, it's
we're,
true.
We're right. Making great progress towards beer o'clock here, and exciting.
Is that a thing?
Beer o'clock. I mean, the idea, like, if it's after 5 o'clock somewhere, then sure, we can crack open a drinks. We're based out of a WeWork here in London, so we've got a whole floor of a WeWork. So like the drinks on tap thing, most people might go and get something on the kind of Friday afternoon.
Well, that's pretty exciting, man. I'm really excited to chat with you about the stuff you're doing and you're working on with Paddle. But before I do, I just want to hear your story about how you became growth at Paddle.
Yeah, so I also know the Paddle guys also at a conference. So I think it was SaaStock 2017. So speaking there, got to know two of the guys there. The following sort of SaaStock started when I was working my last company, selling Hull into Paddle. So Hull being a customer data platform, really sitting at that part of your MarTech stack. And turned out they were just the other end of a street in London where I was working. So that was nice. You could just pop along there. But like the Paddle people everywhere, like particularly pubs, particularly conferences, like pretty social. And so I got to go more of the team, wound up doing a consulting project with them around the implementation of Hull. And this led into joining full time, I think June last year. So it's been an exciting ride since then.
That's awesome. And for people who don't know, what is Paddle?
So Paddle is a SaaS commerce platform. So we help software companies do everything around the selling of software. So all your subscriptions, billing, payments, invoices. Like typically you need a whole bunch of stuff to do this. Like we manage this all in one. And the way we do that is we actually become like a reseller, technically, of all your software. Your customers don't see any difference, but because we can do that, we can build this best-in-class infrastructure. We can manage like all the headaches, like global taxes for you. And so we do that for thousands of software companies worldwide.
Well, that's great. I'm great you're doing growth there. You're also doing growth at Hull. And one of the topics you suggested for this chat is about growth as infrastructure. And when we were chatting before we recorded, you got super excited about it.
Yeah.
Now, what do you mean by growth as an infrastructure, and why are you so excited about that?
Yeah. So like oftentimes you hear people talking about all the kind of fun things they get to do, like A/B testing this or like whatever cool campaigns. And it's like, if you take the step back, you need quite a few things in place first to start running that kind of stuff. Whether like just in a general marketing sense, like you need to have some basic idea of your branding and positioning and like product marketing so people understand what you're selling. And it's the same thing in terms of your data and your tooling and how this all talks to each other and presents itself to sales reps. And particularly in B2B, this gets quite complicated, right? You've got all these things about the accounts which you're targeting and all the people at those accounts. If they're spread across a whole bunch of different tools, then what you're supposed to be saying to all these companies and all these people all sits in a bunch of different places, and sales reps are kind of doing their own thing. So there's got to be stuff to like tie this together. And once you start to tie this together, you get that, like, you start to see that outsized performance. And that's really what I mean. Like, if you don't have that stuff in place, like, you can't make all that, those tools and teams and stuff actually work that effectively. So things like working backwards from the ultimate sales rep experience, like we talk about user experience all the time in like tech these days. What about your humans? What about your sales guys? So kind of working backwards from what's going to be the best way to let them know who to talk to, what to say, and when to say it. And so different, like for instance, in sales, they take that in different ways. That might be inside a Salesforce, might be something like Salesforce Chatter. Here, we're heavy Slack users. So it's working backwards from what does a notification in Slack look like, right? Or the context around the account, which has just taken this particular action, which has this context, and here's where you need to go and take action, and here's the things which need to come from you in order to communicate that to them and move them to the next step. Now, there's tons of stuff which starts to go on behind the scenes. That's why that stuff is really important. It enables us to get that cut above on the sales side. And yeah, so that's infrastructure. And it's a really fun, exciting, geeky space, which I can spend a lot of time talking about how we do all that.
I'm guessing that's what you did for Paddle. Like you came in and you're like, you know, we need to set up growth as an infrastructure here. What were some of the things that you originally did to get that going?
Yeah, so at Paddle, like the past 12 months, we basically 10x'd our average contract value. So this kind of move up market. And so there'd always been like outliers and things going on, but that average had moved up quite substantially. And what that really meant for us is like the really serious move to an account-based marketing approach. And for that, to join together all the dots around all your target accounts and around all the people associated with that is a really, really important thing. And then bringing it to the channels we operate out of, that's sales, that's live chat, that's the website, that's ads, and making sure this all integrates and talks to each other. So we run this event-based, intent-driven, account-based marketing program now because we join together all this like event stream from all our tools. We run a whole bunch of machine learning and enrichment to score and figure out what we want to be saying to them. One of the really cool things, heard this on a podcast, that a company was basically building in a universe of their total addressable market. And so we do that. So we built what we call the software universe, and we use this for all our prospecting. It's like an internal Clearbit, and feed this into whole, together with the event stream, together with the machine learning, and use that to direct which accounts we should be talking to right now that appear to be in the market, who we should be targeting there, who is like at this stage in the kind of buying journey, who is not at that stage of the buying journey, and so on and so forth. So that's some of the kind of projects we've got involved in at Hull and kind of built out over the past few months.
I'm curious what made you guys go up market. I'm just on your website and it seems like you can create a free account. So probably started targeting small, medium businesses. And now you're like, you know, we got to go after the bigger fish. Is that what started it? Sort of got pulled
up market in many ways. So Paddle, remember that kind of reseller thing. So Paddle functions like the app store. And so like kind of the back end of the app store these days, but actually started as an entire marketplace. So you could buy any kind of software on there. They weren't very successful on their buyer side, but they saw like software companies or indie developers like just linking through to the Paddle checkout from their own websites to get all those kind of benefits. And so that early kind of cohort started to be in kind of indie developers, Mac developers especially. So we sort of cleaned up in the Mac space. Most people didn't want to spend 30% or lose 30% of their take to Apple when it was coming through them, like it was their website stuff, right? It's a different story when people are searching the App Store, and the App Store is then your like acquisition engine. That makes sense. And so Paddle really grew off there. But we kind of maxed out that market. And where's one of the next big spaces we're getting pulled into, like more people signing up, was SaaS, and particularly B2B SaaS. So you have a lot, it's a very underserved segment. Typically, you have to tie together a whole bunch of tools on the kind of the checkout payment side. So maybe like a Stripe and a subscription tool and things like this. But B2B, people pay differently once you're at a higher spend. Like you don't want to spend $10,000 on software on a credit card. You probably want to wire transfer that unless you've got some mad limits on your cards. And so this is just a whole different world of just people and processes and reconciliation banking. And these two different worlds just don't talk to each other. Like it becomes hell for a CTO and your engineering team to pull that all together. It's hell for a finance team. And it's because of that, it becomes like a drag on growth. It becomes similar to the growth infrastructure thing we were talking about earlier. It's infrastructure with growth. And that's really evident when you're moving into new markets, right? You're moving up market, you're selling to those bigger enterprises, you get that random check. I remember at Hull when we were starting to get the bigger and bigger checks coming through, we're like, when it's one-off random things, you'll drive down to the bank and like deposit that or whatever weird way different people in different countries are going to send in the way they want to buy. So that's where stuff starts to fall apart. But that's the point when you guys are really unlocking the most growth, and that's where Paddle sits. So you can start to unlock that kind of thing. Same with international, same with adding new products, like one thing which can expand everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you're already kind of alluding to it. You're talking about your 5-star growth framework. You're talking about internalization, moving up market, moving down market, product expansion, monetization. I mean, for people who haven't read that post, I'm gonna link it to the notes because it's good. Yeah. But can you talk a little bit about, you know, that 5-star growth framework that you just alluded to?
So, like when I was, because aware of Paddle, this is going back to when we were interviewing, like off the back of that early contract thing, like understanding why Paddle was doing is quite interesting. It wasn't just like billing infrastructure. It was helping people move into those new markets. I remember listening to, talking with Harrison, one of the co-founders, he linked to one of like a webinar. Maybe we could share that in the notes as well. It's actually to enabling companies to do this kind of stuff is actually quite significant as part of their growth strategy, like moving from like a smaller startup through a Series A and Series B and beyond. And what we start to notice is the companies we help do that, the companies which reach kind of the end goal, so like the Slacks, the HubSpots, the Shopifys, have basically taken all the strategies we're talking about and maxed them all out. It's like HubSpot, right? They started with a like $250 a month sales. You had to go through a salesperson as a marketing platform. It's a flat thing. They changed how they monetize that. So they changed how they price it. They had added different kinds of plans. They added contacts to it. So that the kind of economics of like how they're pricing started to change radically. They added a new product. So the idea around that was that they could cross-sell their existing install base. So they added the whole sales suite there. That was a free trial based product. So they had this whole move into a product-led world and this kind of move down market. And that now drives most of their acquisition today. Meanwhile, they're opening more and more international offices because they had this huge marketing audience, but now this like huge user base for people signing up to the free thing. And that feeds the engine and with the cross-sell, upsell across these different products. And more recently, they've held off for a long time because deliberately because they didn't want to get into just the more competitive space where there's longer sales cycles, there's just more investment needed. They've made a very deliberate move upmarket across their product range. And so we like to call this like a 5-star startup because they've taken each of these growth tracks and started to explore them to the max. If you look across the Slacks, the Zooms, the HubSpots, the Shopifys of the world, they all do this and they talk openly about doing it. So with being a public company, they have to be explicit about this stuff in their quarterly investor reports, when they're doing their S1s. And so you see this sort of terminology sort of come up everywhere. And so basically we're like, well, if we pull this together into a framework, here's what we can use to advise and consult with Paddle sellers on how they need to be thinking about this stuff. Like, you're actually missing opportunities here. And quite often that sort of exposes like, oh, here's ways that people get onto the next stage. Like a lot of our software sellers looking to raise the next round of financing, they're trying to put together this story about, well, how can I grow in the next sort of 12, 18 months? What that's really going to look like? And we're showing like, well, look, here's a new Paddle dashboard. Here's like the top accounts in there. Like, you should probably be thinking about a team plan or like try some founder-led sales, maybe that you can later hire like a salesperson, see what that does. We see like a a company like Framer did that on Paddle. They raised, I think, an 8 million Series A, hired a VP off that. Here's your top accounts that are signing up, right? And off that, started getting some like bigger team deals, enterprise deals, $100,000 deals, hit their Series B. I think it was about 24 million about 12 months later. And so it's starting to guide and shape that direction. And then for particularly like product-led software companies, like if anyone can sign up, that means you definitely have an international user base. No one's thinking how to optimize that. Like no one's thinking about things like currencies and the impact on payment acceptance. We see like enormous lift in revenue from very basic optimizations there. And so this is the kind of coming that like framework we can keep going back to helps describe and grade how we'd rate like a software company's growth strategy. So yeah, like we're typically working with like 1-2 star companies, and we want to take them through to like 3, 4, 5.
I'm curious about that product that you talked about, optimization for, you know, the pricing stuff. Like what kind of optimization are you talking about? And like you talked about a lift in revenue, like what kind of lift have you seen just based on, you know, past companies that's worked with Paddle?
So if you go to Germany and you buy software there, you don't pay with a credit card typically. If you go to and you don't pay in dollars typically, and you don't pay, you prefer not to pay, get English receipts which aren't compliant with German law. Same thing with Japan, same thing with Brazil, same thing with India, same thing with these massive, massive markets. And I think European software companies hit some of this much earlier in their realization that this is a problem because their domestic market is only so big. And so that naturally they're thinking more international, but they're also English speaking. So they're aware of like, they get to access the world, like the like North American software market, et cetera, et cetera. And so just the basic things of selling, how people buy locally, like go and do user testing, go to any of these countries where your top, where your users, your customers are, and just ask how they buy software, and you're going to hear the following answers. Well, like we see this in our data. So like I can ram stats down your throat. Like 70% of our transactions under $50 in Germany go through PayPal. 70%. Are you integrating with PayPal? No, because the API docs are a pain in the ass and they're a difficult company to deal with. This is going out. Sorry if there's folks from PayPal on here, but you're probably fully aware of that already. You need to think about payment methods. You need to think about currencies and accepting currencies there. You get into a whole lot of pain around foreign exchange and stuff like this, but the lift in conversion is significant. Like we're seeing 30% lift on just adding things like 30% in revenue in local globally. And we're seeing like in Germany, doing this in German, in euros, pricing to local markets, et cetera, like 3x performance on checkout versus like other competitors. And that's when we break out the lift from when companies are migrating over and just having the better Paddle checkout in there as well. So all this kind of thing, like that's a really key point of your buying journey. Having that level of lift in there is really, really helpful. And it doesn't mean you have to localize your entire product yet. Like that becomes a bit more intense, particularly when you've got like languages who's doing like right to left and or like sideways, I don't know, something else going on. But like taking that key part of the buying journey, which should be local, like big customers can freak out when they don't have compliant invoices or tax compliant invoice and they have to go round and round and round with finance, like genuinely leads to like cuts in conversions, particularly on the top end. But yeah, like there's a whole world of optimization around that. Fraud comes up more and more in emerging markets. Like this stuff is just not obvious if you stay in your own building and don't get out of the house and don't go and test this stuff. And if you throw stats around like you're not going to believe me about the PayPal thing, go to Germany, then you'll believe. Like it's, you know, yeah, I don't know what more to say, because it's like you can sort of rabbit on about this these kind of stats. It's, you know, people won't see it until they believe. And like, to be candid, the US is the worst for this. Like Americans,
yeah, it
think
is. I was going to say that.
Americans think they know best. Like they and most software, these are the largest software market in the world. Like, why do we need to go elsewhere? But they do need to go elsewhere because that they're maybe the largest thing. But most of the software spend in the world is outside of the US. You're going to have to figure out how to tap these markets. And guess what? They're often less competitive and they're less expensive. And so the companies who do this win. Like Brazil has enormous volume. we see this come up repeatedly amongst our sellers who are embracing this kind of strategy. India. Now, India, you've got a different like buying parity. So like companies like Slack will price differently in India because it doesn't make sense. You're pricing, say, things like HR software, your $2, $3, $4 a month per employee actually becomes quite a significant part of that proportion of their salary in, say, like a call center or something in India. And so you need to price differently. You can tap an enormous market of a billion people, but you need to do it intelligently and locally. And so there's this whole lot of optimization which people can start to think about, open their minds to, versus like going toe-to-toe with their biggest competitor in the US. American companies typically internationalize a little later. They bring the playbooks which they feel work, and they've seen work maybe in the US, and quite often they end up with a lot of egg in their face first off because it just doesn't perform. It doesn't work. Wasn't that kind of the US culture of selling? Like, adopt the learner mindset. Like, go into a new market, figure it out from that, those first principles again. The international is probably newest to folks in the US. Ironically, they probably got the biggest upside. There's my thoughts on the kind of data I've seen.
No, that's really fascinating. That's something that I've seen. I worked with companies in US and Canada. They're like, oh, let's just target North America and maybe Australia and United Kingdom because they got the money to pay for our stuff. When do you see companies actually start thinking more international? Is it after, a certain MRR or a certain like race that you're actually trying to target them? Now they're like more looking seriously into something like Paddle.
Yeah. So I think we see the kind of question of all this stuff around like how do you optimize your revenue and billing comes up like at two major points in a SaaS company's life. Firstly, when you start, right, you just need to pick something and get going. You need to pick something and get going. And so you're just going to find the thing and start selling the software like day one. Then there's the stage down the line, you start noticing really weird things like you just have terrible conversion rates in certain cohorts. And like, why is this? You're digging into it. Like you're digging into product analytics, you're digging into this kind of stuff. Like, don't know about it. And there's no tools which start to surface this kind of world of like payments. And then you look over and there's some weirdly large finance team. You've no idea why or what they do all day. Like it becomes this stuff. And this is where like someone who owns revenue starts to pay attention. And that's typically where we get those discussions come in. So you had like a Canadian based SaaS seller who's doing about like 25 million a year. Suddenly realize, oh, like we had a quick conversation. Like, so you're talking about India being a really great market. Like, how are you doing for payment acceptance there? Like, what about your subscription renewals? And like, oh, that would make sense because they can start drawing the dots between all the symptoms which sort of built up. And so these kind of growing pains as you're moving from that like 1-2 star startup into this kind of five star mix. And like venture-backed companies, like you're going Series A, Series B. These are, you can't run away from this stuff. And so by the time you're in public, you probably do need to be a five-star thing now because the kind of rates of growth that you can start to open up.
I'm curious about that playbook then. Like, let's say that company, it's like, oh, I'm going to go to India. Like, what's next step? Like, do you start up like looking at their billing and that, and then do they open an office in India? Like, what some other companies has done, like HubSpot has opened up like international offices, but what would you say is the next step after that?
So there's two paths. So if you take like a more product-led approach, like people can sign up to your product, everything like that, you're actually probably international from day one. Like someone in some far corner of the globe away from you has found your thing and signed up. Great. It's the point at which that kind of user base, like a 10% lift or a 20% lift in any one of those geos is actually going to mount up to something. So there's a big opportunity to start internationalizing early there. You don't need offices. You don't need all that kind of overhead. But the opportunity to do stuff around there tends to be a little earlier on. Those, like, they tend to be higher volume businesses as well. So they kind of the uplift, which you're going to see there. So that's quite exciting. The other part, kind of the sales-led approach, if you're hitting these higher contract values, you're probably only selling through sales guys. And the first move you're going to make is probably just trying to sell bigger and bigger logos and get some of those in. And it makes sense to keep that, like, all together. Going international there does mean things like setting up extra offices in other locations. And you generally only want to do that when you really are being pulled into other regions. Like you see sales reps being assigned territories and working hours, which are like totally outside there. Like that kind of symptom starting to come in. And so like here at Paddle, we've just opened a New York office to solve exactly that problem. So yes, we want to go and serve the US market, North American market. But we want to be able to do that with like a little more resources, a little closer. Americans like to buy from people more locally as well. You learn the culture, you learn the best way to sell there. And it is different. Like we with people, the kind of manner of how people dig through this kind of stuff is different. The kind of questions which people ask is different. The stages that these kind of questions come up, you only really start to focus on that with the kind of local presence. So that those are kind of the two paths. And so you hit these different stages. You internationalize deliberately later on the sales led, and you accidentally internationalize on the product led thing. It's just whether you have optimized it. Like, have you asked the questions? Like, What if we sold in their currency via the payment method that they all use? What would it take to do that? Like, what are kind of case studies? What are kind of things around there? Oh, it turns out this is going to be a pretty big revenue lift. Well, that's going to make my Series A deck much, much easier, blah, 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 blah. There's a bigger opportunity earlier on that side.
When we come back in just a moment, Ed talks exactly about how to expand internationally, from timing to which country to target next. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, Superside. As marketers, getting on brand design and creative exactly when your team needs it can be very painful. I know that firsthand working for marketing teams. It's hard to deliver on the seemingly endless number of requests that come in from teams across your company, and prioritizing those tasks can feel impossible. Instead of spending your time and resources on strategic projects that can possibly impact the business, you find yourself mired in production level tasks. Your agency may be failing you with skyrocketing costs and late turnarounds, while finding and managing freelancers is no longer a realistic option. There's just too many variables to manage, from sourcing to schedules, fees to overall quality of the delivered designs. Don't sweat it, just Superside it. With Superside.com, you get a dedicated design team that understands your goals and gets trained on your brand guidelines for the fraction of hiring a full-time designer. Your Superside design team acts as an extension of your organization, helping you to service your requests at volume and deliver on your company's design and creative needs in a scalable, efficient way. They'll confidently jump in at a moment's notice to produce the on-brand work you need when you need it. Create an account and get started, or better yet, book a demo to see it in action at superside.com, or you can find that link in the description of this episode. Enough about this, let's jump back in my chat with Ed.
I'm also curious about which countries that, you know, you were talking about, like, oh, if we target that country, we'll have this MR growth. Like, how can companies decide where they're going to go next? Like, you do some market research, or like, is there some kind of suggestion do you have for people to figure out what market to target next?
So I think the on the product led side, I think that this is kind of the way we look at it. The product led side, you don't choose because people can come just sign up from anywhere. You can do things like what language your websites are in, and like, we've got a ton of people in Brazil. Like, let's consider what like a Portuguese landing page would start to look like, that sort of thing. And these are some of the questions we start to dig into now. That's sort of the way on that end. And that on the sales-led side, it's like pulling your sets of customers and looking at the attributes around them, which guide how you're going to move into new markets. Like, how much are these companies spending? Like, how can you increase that? Are there actually lots of people from the same company? You should probably be thinking about team plans, how to wrap this up into something bigger, looking at what the usage trends are. This is going to help you package different ways. And then, like, of those companies, where are they located? One of the nice things we've just done with that Software Universe kind of project is map where the biggest, like, hubs are for SaaS in the world, because we put people on planes, we go to them, and we meet them. This becomes a really key thing. So, like, it becomes very data driven if you're deploying salespeople and teams to go do that kind of stuff.
Now for you, I'm curious about Paddle. You know, you guys just said you opened up a New York office. What kind of other growth levers are you looking at as Paddle goes to grow more?
So, I mean, there's all kinds of things. I mean, the kind of debates we're having, I love Christian, our CEO, because you can come up with another idea or say, yes, it sounds great. But the reality is we've got like a real focus right now on SaaS. And we've got a real focus on like, let's get that US market spooled up and matching the kind of sales velocity rates of London. But yeah, like the vision is to sell, like, support all the software companies in like that exist. Like you day one of you starting a software company is you get some hosting and infrastructure, like you buy AWS, you put a credit card in there, and then you buy Paddle because you need something to sell your business, sell your software. And we want to basically do that for the software industry, which is an enormous industry, which is that's kind of the vision. So how we do that by geography, by vertical, by size of company, all this kind of, like, there are so many exciting directions we can go in. And New York is just like the first step on that journey.
I'm curious, you're also moving up market. Like, we met at the SaaS North conference and you were talking about this playbook for conference. I'm sure that's like, that's how you network with other SaaS companies like Saster. There's a bunch of SaaS conferences, right? There's a lot, there's a ton. Like what I noticed you brought some of your team members there and they were just smoozing around and like openly just chatting with folks. Like, I'm curious what that playbook is for conference.
So I think SaaS North, we're beginning to like explore off the back of like a lot of success at some other events. So we're really excited for conferences because there's a lot of chance to go and meet a lot of people, engage a lot of people and like tell our story. We've done very well with face-to-face stuff in the past. So like I said earlier, we put people on planes. There's a wonderful program of flights we have up on a board in the office to kind of point people to watch cities. We have like the check-in status and all this kind of stuff, literally like an airport departure board. But so conferences are a chance to do that on steroids, right? So remembering that, like, how do you build that perfect sales experience? How do you create that kind of conversation back and forth and working backwards from there? So conferences, there's a ton of places where you can create those kind of conversations, whether it's a booth, whether it's some like meetup matchmaking app, whether it's a workshop, it's a kind of talk. And so going through the SaaS events or events where we see SaaS companies going to and profiling against, like, what are the opportunities to create the conversation? Like, that's the kind of the thing we optimize for. Like, how do we create these like conversations, this back and forth? Because once we can do that, this is where we can win and we see the conversions go through. So like events like SASTA, we're going with a nice big crew. We can hit on a lot of things. Like, you've got Brain Dates there, you've got Brella there, you've got a workshop there, we got like keynotes there, we've got a big booth there, we're going to have dinners, we're going to have spit glue to this and that, da, da, da. And so we can bring a crew and basically book them out back to back with meetings and stuff to do and create a ton of conversations and a ton of opportunities. We got a really great events, brand and events manager on our team who's like, means this all runs like flawlessly. And then we just have like the sales side gets like ride on top of that, all of that organization infrastructure. Yeah. So that it's really exciting.
I mean, like, people can totally screw up their whole like playbook for conferences because it can get very expensive, right? Like, you get, you know, you gotta have the booth, and the booth is not sometimes cheap. Then you gotta set it up. Like, you gotta get the design, you gotta get swag. Are you seeing like good returns, especially now you're moving up market with that playbook that you guys have set up?
Yeah, so I think the reason why companies fail at like conference marketing is because they don't think about the marketing side of it. Like, you go there and you splash logos and you do that kind of stuff, but it's forget, like, you're just gonna forget it. You as an attendee are gonna go and see 1,000 things like that, like, sort of, so what? Like, what are you doing to engage those people? Like, actually engage. It terrifies me when you go and see like a conference and you see a booth and these people just standing around with some like leaflets, and this is not work. Like, what are you doing? I find that absolutely mad. So what are the ways to engage people, right? How do you create these conversations? Like, the kind of points of interest, the kind of questions that you ask. We arm like sales reps with basically kind of like a mini leaflet, which basically guides people through what we do on a discovery call. Like, how do we create that kind of stuff? How do we join up what we're doing in a workshop with this, this stuff which is happening on the booth? How do we gave people a free 64-page report on the 5 stars of growth at Assassin. So you give that to people and start asking questions like, how are you thinking about it now? Or like, how are you thinking about your kind of growth strategy? What are your next milestones? And as soon as you get that kind of that back and forth, this is where you start to see that the results, particularly if you've got the kind of the rest of the sales process nailed. So I just don't understand what most people are doing with their conference strategy. Is it just we go there for brand? Or we just go there and just throw BDRs and SDRs and sales guys at the problem? I don't know. This think like through the moments of that experience as an attendee, like how are you fitting in each of those spares? And it's not like making sure you schmooze and booze at every single possible stage. It's like, actually, is this an intelligent thing? Think just like user onboarding, just like the kind of sales alerts. Like, this has all got to join up, and then we work through each of those steps. And yeah, that's kind of how we think about it.
I also like how you provide leaflets. Like, you're giving like maybe like battle cards or discussion point starters to the team. Is that something that you done? Because like, that sounds like it's part of the whole growth infrastructure, right? You're actually providing the infrastructure for helping sales succeed.
So it kind of came from, so when I was at Hull, I went and did SAS, like Hull at Hull, an early stage startup. I did SAS last year by myself. But to like guide people through that kind of set of conversation, I booked back-to-back brain dates, which are like these one-on-one sort of kind of meetings around a topic, which is great. But to kind of guide people through that, some of that discussion at the end, I'd have people like draw out their stack and to like guide people through that at this like fold out leaflet with it kind of categories of tools dotted around, and obviously Hull in the middle, this is how it's going to all connect up. And here's a marker. Talk me through your stack. And then they would circle this, circle that, and like, oh, so how's this tied together? And question marks. And basically a ton of notes. And you'd scribble the name of the company at the top, snap a photo. That goes back to the team. And then you fold it up. Here you go. Looking forward to talking next week on whatever call. And it gives that kind of prompts that people can take away. And the other nice thing about it is it feels like quite collaborative. So you can be quite intense on just having a direct conversation with you eye to eye. To actually have something to kind of, we can both look at to the side, it just changes that whole dynamic. And also like people are like, what's he getting out of his bag? What is this strange thing? Okay. Like it arouses that kind of curiosity. Like it creates one of the kind of moments. And you've got to think about how this all ties together end to end. That particular idea, so we did something similar at Paddle, but that particular idea came off like a lot of like failed attempts. And the thing about conferencing is like people aren't like holding it back when they don't get it, or they're going to shut you down, right? And so, which is great as a marketer because you learn so fast, you get this instant feedback. You don't get that from writing website copy, or you maybe get that from like email when you make a mistake, like a spelling thing, some replies really quickly. But typically in marketing, you don't get that like customer feedback so fast. So I love conferences for that because you just listen wall-to-wall feedback sessions. And so this kind of stuff comes from kind of repetitions and repetitions of trying messaging, basically.
I like that, how conversational that is. I think sometimes the other thing that I find in conferences, and that's why I kind of avoid the pit where all the boots are, is that I get there and I feel like I'm being pounced on by all the sales folks,
meat.
Right?
You are meat. you are their piece of quote. You can't blame a sales rep whose like commission is based on all this kind of stuff. Like, that environment is going to set up in the wrong kind of way. But if you know to sell the thing, you should be able to consult in the problem you are solving. Make it about that. Make your engagement around those sorts of problems. So that's what we try to do. I think there's with the kind of conference playbook, it's not really about Paddle. It's about you and how you're thinking about these kinds of problems. Because once you think you're going to have to tackle these kinds of problems, like our model starts becoming make a ton of sense in there. At least it becomes like a conversation it leads to. Like, people want to talk about growth, right? People want to talk about this, these milestones, the kind of revenue opportunities in different markets. And it's a really fun, interesting conversation to have with companies. That then sets up the kind of scope to go and talk about Paddle a little bit, and then maybe set up a call after. It's a different kind of experience you would create.
That totally makes sense. I mean, I'm curious, you know, what other conferences do you have coming up? Are you pretty much fully booked up in the next few months? Or?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a kind of like a program of events coming up, but I mean, the big one for us is SASTA. So this is my first time at Paddle on the Paddle jacket side. Doing SASTA, but I've been 2017, 18, 19, 20, yeah, like, but you go there to feed, you go there to meet people, you go there to like meet the people who are whether it's this year or next year are going to be like part of that you're going to story together. And that's probably one of the big ones. There's a couple of others coming up. Yeah, there's some of the SaaS talk events. There's also like a long list of sort of tech conferences we might be looking at. Like maybe close to the time, have we got people in the area? Are we already in active discussions? Like let's put people on planes on those dates and figure it out. I don't know. What SaaS events are you thinking about or like seeing coming up?
I'm not sure. I haven't taken a look at it. I was thinking not really SaaS focused, but inbound, but I'm going to be traveling it. It's usually September, but this year it's in August. So I'm like, oh man, come on. Like they just announced it. I'm going to be back in, I'm going to Philippines. I haven't been there for like 11 years.
They're doing it in August. That's
yeah, weird. It's weird. That's really weird. I'm, you know, I just have a few more questions. One of the other things that I notice is you send me an email. Your title is Growth Ops. And yesterday, for the first time, I heard the term Product Ops.
Uh-huh.
And then marketing ops, and I'm starting to connect it. Like this whole growth, that's an infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It's essentially growth. Your growth ops. You're providing the place for growth to thrive, essentially.
Yeah. So when I joined Paddle, we were kind of trying to like, how do you describe this kind of set of things? And like, this is kind of a title. They have to put something that's formal. So the informal thing I run with is ed of growth, or like an apostrophe and ed, because then it's like. So it came out of a conference lately, many things, over drinks, like many things. It seems like people enjoy it, so I put it on my LinkedIn, and the people messaged, like, found it interesting and funny. So, yeah, end of growth, but, yeah, like, growth ops, whatever. Like, run that infrastructure, build up that infrastructure, messaging, how do we, like, assemble all this stuff together?
I mean, it's, you know, providing all the ops, the infrastructure for growth requires you to, it's a physical contact sport, right? You have to be there with a team. You know, when you were with Hull, contact sport. Yeah, contact sport. Right?
I use that. I like that.
When you were in Hull, you were far away. Was that a challenge? Like trying to set up the whole growth infrastructure, essentially.
Hull was interesting. So the kind of founders, there was two in Paris and one in Atlanta. So me being in London, I'd go over to Paris every couple of weeks. So I was remote in London. And spend time with the product and engineering team there, and we'd be selling to companies in Paris, but the French are like, there's a different way you're going to sell and be successful there to a way you're going to sell and be successful in the US. Most of our customers are in the US, so our go-to-market team was mostly based there. And that definitely is hard, being having like distributed, but remote work is a thing. The thing which makes it particularly difficult is it wasn't fully distributed. It was still localized on kind of two offices. So if I were to kind of go back and make magic wishes, like I think these are two camps you need to pick one. One, have every like a central office, or two, be fully distributed, because your communication style becomes a mix in between, and this it just creates kind of challenges. I enjoyed the travel. I enjoyed kind of being. Like joining some of this stuff up and kind of learning both sides, but it's definitely harder.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's one thing that I've had experience is like I worked remotely in Toronto for a company in San Francisco, and like they would have conversation and I would just like, you guys made that decision without me.
But do you travel to SF?
I did like once every like once or 2 months, but it's still at that point, like especially as a startup, there was a lot of conversation happening instantaneously. And you're right. I think, you know, now I'm working for a fully remote company and it's totally different. Our communication is more documented and we have to write everything down pretty much just so that people understand.
Yeah, if it's not written, it doesn't happen. So with the hybrid setup, the thing which I insisted on before I would like go anywhere near a contract is like, we have to include travel because there's no way the conversation flows without someone that's kind of face to face time. If you're in this situation, to me, that's kind of the first step forward. You have to kind of overcompensate and overplan for that hybrid remote structure. And it's interesting because like now Paddle's starting that journey with multiple offices, but we're doing it at scale. We've got remote people around satellite around kind of the core London office. But New York is like the first main deliberate office. And so this is where we start to run into some of these problems. But we do it at scale with like a communications infrastructure. We have like executives, we have like managers. You have a different set of things you can throw at this kind of this stuff. And you've also been doing stuff longer. So there's kind of less just day-to-day questions to kind of ask. And it's more about like, well, how do we take what we know already, that we've learned already over how many years, and apply it to the new market, whilst also asking questions around how the whole company is evolving. I think it is different at scale that you can start to manage multi-office.
I'm curious what's next for Paddle. Like once New York and that whole region gets panned out, are you looking at a different kind of international market, or you'll worry about that when you get there?
Yeah, I think the shape of the US could be really quite interesting. We probably want to bring like support success into that as well. Like how much of that is our seller facing versus maybe our seller's buyers facing? Does that need to be, maybe put that somewhere in the Midwest, or do we need to be in the Bay Area or something on the West Coast? That might be nice. But really, like what's cool about Paddle, and this goes back to the like size of markets thing, is we are where our seller's buyers are. So we are everywhere. And so thinking about all these regions around the world, like we can probably serve Brazil time zones from London or even New York. But Asia starts from a really, really interesting opportunity. I think enterprise software and like this higher end software tends to thrive in countries with higher GDP per capita, like salaries, et cetera, a bit higher. The cost of people is a bit higher. But the world of product-led companies coming from like APAC is enormous. So in my mind, I think that's going to be one of the most exciting things. And all these companies are trying to figure out how to sell to Europe, to North America, to like markets where we have this higher GDP per capita. That's a really exciting opportunity because they run into all these problems of how do they sell internationally? How do they move up market? How do they fix their pricing, which has been like built around a totally different local economic model. This for me is probably one of the biggest things in how we think internationally. So yeah, 40 offices all around Asia is what we're going to be doing this. Yeah. If a chief commercial officer can hear that, he might have a heart attack, but yeah, we'll get to it. Maybe 18 months.
That's funny. I love it. I love it. I love how aggressive that is. I'm just about to wrap up. I just have a couple more questions. One of them I love asking because especially for people who are just starting out, like what is your one piece of advice for anybody who is in growth or marketing and they're starting to wrap their head around like going to the next level?
So people are going to really not like this answer, which is you need to go and sell. You need to be able to sell. I need to be able to sell like you'd want to be sold to. And this means you're going to like go have sales conversations one-on-one, sell like you would as a rep. You're going to get egg on your face, just like the people you're supposed to be working with. But you're also going to learn far more from that than almost any other feedback channel. And this becomes just so invaluable for how you put together copy, how you put together content, how you put together campaigns. And that really became kind of the secret weapon for me, being able to like move into different companies. Like Hull is quite complex, Paddle is quite complex, but what's it take to get people to that aha moment? And once you have that aha moment, once you figure that out, you can work backwards from there in a way sales reps can't. They're going to carry on the kind of selling thing, but you can work backwards and think how do we build campaigns around this? How do we build content around this? And in the case of both Paddle and Hull, it's quite consultative. And so the kind of consultation, the kind of questions, like how you kind of set a deal up face-to-face, like at a conference, so I like the conference playbook, working kind of backwards from that sets up your content strategy. It sets up your website. It sets up everything around that. And so I think marketers shy away from this. They don't understand the customer because they can't sell. Now I don't want to put like sales marketers against each other in that kind of world, but like it's amazing. We go to say a conference and you ask whoever marketing manager who is there, like, so what do you guys do? And they can't explain face to face, and they can't. That is mad, absolutely mad. And yet we're paying you a salary to do this at scale. So humble yourself, go and talk to a customer, try and explain the thing face to face. But for me, like, I'm not popular when I bring this up with people. Like, oh, I'm really struggling to come out. I'm trying to figure out like what's the best way to solve it. Like, stop, pause, go and sell, go and see how this is being sold, go and see the aha moments, experience there, try and do it yourself. That was the kind of secret sauce. I figured that out at a whole, I think, first, the well, you just have to, kind of that early stage company, all the hats, and figure out the kinds of things which are going to get that deal forward, get the kind of excitement, get the right stakeholders on board. And then you go and build a marketing strategy to support that.
Is that what you're going to do for any new hires for your growth or marketing team? You're just like, no, I'm going to kick you out of the door and let's go get you selling.
Yeah. So we have quite a collaborative kind of sales team structure here. So like AEs have BDR pairs. And so it will typically be kind of two people on a call, and like a solutions guy will be on there as well. And to have maybe one other person, it can get a bit weird when you get up, you have a potential client on call, they have like this panel of people just waiting. That's not so fun. But to like step into the ring a little bit, and we like trying to create opportunities for that. But the really nice thing I like, so we use Zoom in every single meeting, and all Zoom meetings get recorded and put into Gong. So Gong is all these recorded sales meetings and transcripts that we can go through, we can search, I can go and find whatever competitor, I can go and find whatever phrase, how people are thinking about international or like pitching something like currency or whatever, and dig into that. So I can typically tell people, good morning, here's Gong, here's your laptop, here's headphones, come back in and two-day, like go through and listen to all this stuff, listen to this back and forth. If you understand that, you're going to be so much better rewarded than just getting started. Like, what are you going to do? Keyword research? That's not going to tell you anything. I want people to jump in on the kind of the tail end of this kind of stuff. Yes, things like that matter. But if you don't understand how that keyword relates to that aha moment face-to-face, like, yeah, good luck. That's what I'd say. Not popular.
No, it makes. I totally agree. I did a stint of sales. I was not good, but it kind of threw me in the fire.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've seen some of the best marketers I know started off in sales. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. How big is the team at Paddle now? Like you're talking about.
We're about 130,
40, 50. Depends
how many ways there's a couple of ways we kind of cut it. But yeah, like sort of size. A lot of hiring at the moment, so yeah, because most functions, yes, it's a podcast, we're hiring. We're hiring in marketing, sales,
yep,
hiring engineering, product in New York, in London, yeah, all that good stuff.
Awesome, man. Well, I think I'm about to wrap up. Like, where can people find out more about you, or do you have any call to action other than just that hiring? Like, you know, my listeners are marketers, most of them are probably in SaaS because I've interviewed a lot of SaaS marketers.
Like run your business in Paddle, that'd be really great. See you at a conference. Like, I'll probably, if you're at a SaaS conference, come and say hi. The main thing I think of this kind of like interviewee stuff online is reach out. Like I found most people don't do this, is actually go and connect with the people who they're kind of listening to and like learning some things from. They want to go and ask questions. Maybe they don't because they don't reach out. So hit me up on LinkedIn, ask your questions. I'd love to hear. I'm on Twitter too. So I'm at Ed Fry Ed. And the same thing for LinkedIn. So those are my two kind of go-to sources right now. We'll be publishing more on the kind of Paddle blog around the kind of five-star strategy and whatnot over the coming weeks and months.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much, Ed. I really appreciate your time.
Cheers. It's been good fun to talk.
That's it for this episode. My takeaways from this episode. First, to unlock real growth, you have to think about expanding your market, not just capturing more of an existing one. A killer product, a great story, and sales talent are just the bare essentials now. Second, optimize for being international from day one. Growing companies often see international expansion as a huge endeavor, requiring years of careful planning, and nobody wants to do that. But Ed points out even small optimization for global customers can have outsized results, especially in software where the barriers to entry are low. Third, growth requires collaboration, not kingdoms. It should be clear by now that a truly effective growth strategy spans a number of initiatives. Paddle's five-star framework dispatches with the notion that a company can get on just by its product, marketing, and sales alone in a way that will produce massive and meaningful growth. Now, did you miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode at RamblyJohn or email me, ramly@growthtoday.fm. I also just love to hear from you. I love to hear from my listeners. What are you working on? What are you excited about these days? What's new? Just let me know. You got my email there and my Twitter account. Before we end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Superside. Built for marketing, creative, product design, and strategy teams, Superside makes it easy to bring your ideas to life. With a dedicated team assigned to all subscription customers, Superside delivers game-changing design at lightning-fast speeds with no pricing surprises. Create an account and get started, or better yet, book a demo to see it in action at superside.com. You can also find the link in the description of this episode. Please also support me. You can, first of all, share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn or tell a friend about this episode. Second, you can join the Grow Today mailing list. And third, you can support me on Patreon for as little as $2 to get an ad-free version of this podcast. You can go to patreon.com/growtoday or find the link in the description. That's it for now. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramly John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing.